It's not even a good siren, by the way. Hey,
nor was it 16 welcome. Seconds.
It was 16 seconds. For everybody just all of a sudden turned us on, heard me say something about a siren, that was our intro to let us know when to start our show. It's something a little bit different that they started doing, and I think we'll agree that that's not a fire truck siren. That's more like an ambulance siren, so we're going to have fire engineering fix that as soon as they can. So welcome everybody in. We're super excited tonight. And the reason I'm excited is that I've gotten to know our guests tonight over the last year or so, but, you know, known about him, but actually got to teach with him and be around him and work side by side with him at some conferences here in the last year, which has just been a truly exciting for me. And I think he's going to bring a lot to the table and hopefully be able to share a lot of great information with everybody tonight. So I'm going to start off with our standard introductions. I think everybody should know by who we are by now. My name is Todd Edwards, 31 years of Atlanta Fire Rescue, retired. I operate Fire Life Training. Very fortunate and blessed to get to meet all these guys, like our guests tonight, of course, Anthony and Joe, and so many other incredible firefighters across this country. And that's truly the thing I love the most. And, you know, for guys that are interested, I'm taking my PAT test tomorrow, so I'm going to be a rookie on a part-time basis for an organization near me. So I have that going on tomorrow. I'm excited about kind of doing that on the side again. Like I don't have time for it, but I'm going to still do it. Let's get Joe introduced. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hey, guys. What's going on? My name's Joe Ficarelli. I'm a lieutenant with the fire department in New York City. I've been on 13 and a half years now. I'm coming up on 4 years in Manhattan as a lieutenant. I'm assigned to Engine 40, and I did 10 years in the Bronx.
Awesome. Thank you. And Anthony, are you with us right now?
Yeah, I'm here. Anthony Rowe. Okay, I'm a captain with the Mobile Fire Rescue Department in Mobile, Alabama. Been in the fire service 15 years, 13 with Mobile. Started out as a volunteer in northern New Jersey before moving down here. Got to know all these guys and teach with them throughout the past few years. And done a lot with Clyde here recently with all the FD tactics stuff. So definitely think he's going to bring a bunch to the conversation tonight. So excited about that.
And without any further, I'm going to let our guest tonight introduce himself. Chief, go ahead, sir.
All right. Well, Clyde Gordon. I work with the City of Houston Fire Department. I've been there almost 31 years. 1990 is when I got my start there. I'm a district chief or battalion chief with District 8, which is our downtown district. I spent about 15 years on the engine, about 4 on the truck, wasn't for me, and then made battalion chief, so our district chief.
Very good. And it's funny as, especially when you and your partner in crime there in Houston are together, to listen to you guys go back and forth and your different philosophies. And I think that's some of the things. So, you know, we'll kind of hit on some of these things a little bit tonight. How did you, and I'm just going to start this, and this is, you know, definitely for Chief. How did you decide that you were going to be a fireman? You just wake up one day and go, hell, I'll just do that? Or how did you get involved into the fire service and kind of be where you're at today?
Well, I really would like to tell you it was this deep drive that I had to serve my community and save people's lives, but it really was pretty sad, to be honest with you. I lived in a small town in Texas, and I was a 16-year-old boy, and I went to Pizza Hut with my best friend after high school, and he got a 50% discount on pizza, and I had to pay full price. And the whole reason he got a discount is because he was a volunteer fireman. So I went straight home and told my mom. Of course, I lived there. I was a 16-year-old kid that I wanted to be a volunteer fireman. And for the sad and strict reason that they got a 50% discount on pizza at the local pizza place. So not the greatest of beginnings for a 30-year career, but what I learned once I got into it, I had some really good mentors and some people that drew me in, and then I got bit by the bug, and I absolutely loved it. I realized that that was what I was put together to do. So, yeah, about 1986, somewhere around there, I walked into the fire station for the first time.
And I've heard that story, and that's why I asked that question of you. You know, you can ask that question of 1,000 guys, and there's going to be 1,000, and there's probably more stories of the Pizza Hut discounts than there are of that great natural calling to be, you know, be a better human being and save mankind. And there's probably a lot more Pizza Hut stories out there.
Well, you know, like I tell people, I still enjoy pizza, so, you know, it's paid off for me over the years. So,
so one of the things that I was, you know, and I always jot down little things that I think are important, you know, based on whoever's coming on the show and those things. And one of the things I really thought about because of your long career and you're with one of the busiest and biggest fire departments in the entire world. What was your biggest challenge? I'm going to ask everybody this, but I want to start with Chief. What was your biggest challenge coming off that, you know, being a backstep firefighter, just, you know, charging through the door to moving in more into that boss role, whether, you know, as lieutenant and then eventually captain, battalion chief, and, you know, how you moved through the ranks? What was your biggest challenge that maybe somebody can use to help them when they face that challenge?
I think, you know, when I first started as a firefighter, especially with the city of Houston, I can only speak of, you know, my experiences there, but I was pretty self-centered as far as my role there. The firefighters, we grouped together, and I worried about my partner a lot, but I really didn't worry about the big picture. I was more concerned about if I could beat them to the door, beat them to the hallway, beat them, you know, and be on the nozzle. That was really my biggest concern. So as far as, like, being concerned about overall safety, safety of each other, safety of myself, none of that really came into mind. It sounds ridiculous, but it's really the truth. And the way we were raised in the Houston Fire Department, that they really didn't bother to tell you that you might get hurt. You know, you would think that would be common sense, but to a young man, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I was stoked to be there, and I was about the adrenaline, and I was about making sure you were behind me. And as a young firefighter, I didn't really have a whole lot of concern for everything else. And back in that day, the officers, they didn't really take a real leadership role in some instances. If they had good firefighters around them, they just kind of followed behind them. So we really had a lot of leeway to do what we thought was the right thing to do. Well, as I grew, that really didn't set me up to be a very good officer, because I still was mostly concerned about being the first one through the door. And it took some life experiences and some time and some maturity on life to realize that, you know, that wasn't necessarily the best place for me to be. Once you start making rank, well, your picture needs to be much bigger, and you have a lot of concern for a lot of different things and a lot of different people, and you really have to start looking out for those folks. When I first made engine captain, I noticed, you know, I would be at the nozzle. Well, that's not where I needed to be. So it took a little maturity on my part to slow down. I had a couple near-death experiences here and there that helped mature me a little bit. And then Grady Burke, who was a dear friend of mine, was killed and in the line of duty. And he was one of those guys you thought would never get hurt. And when that happened, it really started making me think about where I was, what I was doing, and what my true responsibilities were.
There, I love something you said there, and then we'll move this to Joe and Anthony. I like the word you said, maturity, and the reason I say that is mostly because our service throughout the country is very, very young, and that I think that maturity definitely plays a role. It definitely played a role for me coming up through the ranks.
I still was trying to play run and gun fireman as a new lieutenant and not really leading. And it took me, I kind of started teaching it. It's a year in every position because you're literally starting a new job in a lot of ways. And it took me a year to kind of learn those lessons. And I think maturity was a huge factor in that. And so just, you know, frat boy on nozzle, I was, you know, trying to lead the other frat boys, and it just didn't work out well until I learned those lessons. How about for you, Anthony?
Right.
Step up from the back seat to the front seat.
All right. Well, I think, you know, life has a way to lead you and mature you also. And when you mm-hmm. see things happen to people you care about, friends, and you think, golly, man, how did that ever happen to that guy? Because he and I crawled down many a dark hallway together, and then here he was in a position, and it just went bad for him. And so you realize also that, you know, once you're in that position, you've got a lot of people, you know, they always say the guys behind you, you know, they're all on your tailcoat too. You know, you're responsible for those guys behind you. Well, you're responsible for those guys and girls behind you, but they got mamas and daddies and babies and aunts and uncles and grandmas, everybody that loves them. So you got a lot of people dependent on you and expecting you to make good decisions. And I'll be honest with you, for a long time, I didn't make good decisions. I just made, you know, hasty decisions and you know, I went off of macho, bravado, ego a lot more than I ever did in my brain.
Oh. Yeah. Boy, that sounds so familiar.
Anthony, most of us are probably built that way. So,
I think so. What about for you, Anthony, coming up in Mobile, you know, obviously a different organization, younger. I know you guys have gotten very young, and I know the guy you work with is a more mature officer. I don't know if you've had him from jump, but what about for you, your biggest challenge?
I would say one of the biggest ones would be that we were so young. And then on top of that, I hired in very young. So when I got promoted age-wise, I was still young and maturing. But everyone on my company was older than me. So it was dealing with that and how to be the boss, how to, you know, get their respect and still be some of them considerably younger. But also at the same time, when we get promoted, we had to go – you had to leave. So I worked my whole career downtown where I work now. But when I got promoted, I had to leave, and I went to the far southwest side of the city, which was an area that had literally just got incorporated into the city. So it was a whole different ballgame for me going from where I work now, being in that downtown district. And as simple as just we knew we always had water. We had hydrants on every corner to go into somewhere where they had areas that had no hydrants. And then the buildings mm-hmm. changed. We went from dealing with very old stuff to a lot of newer construction, mainly one- and two-story houses, trailers, and it was just a whole different ball game trying to, one, deal with the being in charge, having that role, getting their respect, doing the right thing, taking care of them while still learning an environment that I'd never worked in before and was nothing like anything I'd worked in before, and trying to learn that environment, see how things worked out there. You know, people just, things were different as far as, like, you know, how companies operated. Were downtown, it was like a big race to get in because we're all on top of each other. You know, you made one wrong turn, you just got beat in. We're out there, you had a decent lot, you know, decently large run area, so you had a little bit of time, but you were going to be there by yourself versus people right on top of you and just adjusting to that while still learning that new role of being the boss.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I mean, again, a little bit similar to what me and Chief had kind of said as well. How about for you, Joe, coming up through your organization?
You know, my answer and Anthony's answer are very similar. And, you know, it comes down to maturity. I got promoted at 32, which, you know, in our job is very young. So I have these guys looking at me like, well, you're the boss now. You look really young. Prove it to us. Like, prove that you know how to, you know, that you can do this job. So it's, you know, getting through the maturity of teaching these, you know, these Harlem firefighters that have 25 years on. When I walked in, I just got promoted. I had 9.5 years on. I was the junior guy by 6 years. The rest of the crew had, you know, 15, 20, 25 years. And I'm like, oh, Jesus. This is one of those things where, you know what? I'm going to step back. You guys know what you're doing. I'm cool. Mm-hmm. But then there's the other extreme of Manhattan, where you get downtown, not downtown, but like into like Midtown and Times Square, and the guys, they're all young, and they're looking at me like I know everything, and I'm like, you have 6 months on the job. I don't know these buildings. You have more experience than me, so I'm asking you questions. So just the big problem for me, just like Anthony, move to a new area, you got to now prove yourself, and you look young, so that goes against you as well. But as time goes on, you learn these buildings, you have fun, and you figure it out. Luckily, all the fires go out. So you figure out your mistake, you learn from it, and then the next time you don't repeat it. And that's just what you need to do. And you just need to – you do that as a fireman, you do that as an officer, and I'm sure you do that as a chief. You make a mistake, and you're like, oh, crap, I'm never doing that again, and you don't make it.
Interesting. And I'm not arguing. I think that you make – I think your points are as valid as everybody's are. I think it's a little bit different way of looking at it. I think the challenge, though, right now, what are we doing now? You're a senior man. Anthony's a senior man. Clyde's a senior man. What do we do so those young guys coming up, what's that challenge look like now, you know, compared to when we were coming up through the ranks? How do we keep them from having to go through some of those challenges by, you know, with training, education, and I like we learn from our mistakes, but we also need to be educated before those mistakes occur so we can make better decisions. I'm just giving my two cents here because the mistakes we make can be detrimental at the same time. And, yeah, I agree. I learn from the mistakes, but I'm a big fan of learning from our successes and the successes of others to teach us things. As we go along, I love what you said about let senior men kind of help you show the way. But what would you do now different, Chief, as far as making that step up? Or what advice would you tell me? I'm 25. I've got 6 years in, and I'm about to make lieutenant in your battalion, in your district.
Yeah, so I think one of the differences, at least for me, is there's so much information and so many places you can go to get training and information and mentorship. All of these things are so readily available today as opposed to when I was coming around. You know, you had a few magazines and a few conferences, and that was really about it. And so the senior man played so much, had so much impact because he taught you how to wash dishes, mop, everything, you know, pull lines. You learned from that guy. Today, you know, I tell people all the time, look, if I'm new and I'm coming in, first I'm going to go to the busiest place that I can find. If it has Constantine wire around it, that's even better because those houses are going to work. You know what I mean? And if you find a house that works and is busy, you're going to get a whole lot less of the bullhorn and a whole lot more. Those guys want to be there as a general rule. And they don't mind training and they don't mind doing things. So I'm going to seek out those opportunities, and then I'm going to find a mentor that will mentor me and just kind of be in my back pocket and run things by them and just learn from them and shadow those guys. I was told years ago, find the guy that sits in the corner and doesn't say much. That's probably the one you need to talk to, because the one that tells you about everything he did every day, he's probably full of crap. He probably hadn't done half of it. So, you know, even for me lately, just the experience to go to these different conferences, meet people like yourselves, talk about the things we do, see how they do it in Alabama and Atlanta and all these different places, it makes you so much more well-rounded. And I think the opportunity is there for us. It doesn't cost a lot of money. You can get things offline. You can – these podcasts, everything. Now, you know, anybody can be an expert. All they have to do is type it into their email or call themselves an expert. So you have to vet all these things. But there is a lot of avenues to get a lot of information. My world growing up was Houston. I knew Houston. I didn't know what Dallas did. I didn't know what San Antonio did. I know what Houston did and does. So for me to branch out and expand that has made a difference even to this day. I mean, I'm not done. And I'm not done learning. I'm not done trying to figure this out. Every single run we make that is of any significance, we're going to do a postmortem. We're going to sit and talk about this thing before we ever move. And, you know, I'm real nitpicky about it because I want them to learn. I want them to discuss things with me. It's a there's no rank in that. These guys can talk
right.
openly amongst each other. That way, even towards me, I want to know what I could have done different too, because, you know, that's not always easy for them to say, but once we've developed that relationship, you know, they feel comfortable with talking to me about why we did certain things. So I think there's a lot of avenues for a young guy to step up and realize you're going to mess it up. Get your ego out of the way. Realize you're not the smartest guy in the room all the time. And keep your eyes and ears open and listen to some things. Train your crew, spend time with them where you can trust them. And you guys, four brains are a whole lot better than just one. So work together and really just get your ego out of the way and be willing to listen.
I think Joe made that point really well as a young lieutenant and these 15-year vets, you know, coming out of incredibly busy environment in Harlem. That can be a detriment, but it definitely paid huge for Joe to learn from those guys. And I think if he would have went in there with an attitude, how would that have gone for you, Joe, if you would have went there with I know it all attitude?
Oh, I never would have been in that firehouse ever again. they're known for, you know, they bust the balls of the officers. Our department. The firehouse is the men's house. The officers are just guests.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't matter how much time you have as an officer. If the guys want to do something and the guys have it set in their minds, kind of going to happen. So you just sit back, you let the guys take over, you see what's going on, you monitor, and you learn. And it's not only just learning from the senior guys, too, because like I said, I would talk to a probie who's got a year in Manhattan. When I first got there, I'm like, listen, you've been in this situation way more than me. You've been in this kind of building that I've never been in my life. What do you guys do? And when you give that power to the junior guy, to a probie, like, hey, I need your help. Help me, and we'll figure this out together. For the most part, they love that opportunity because they know that you are valuing their opinion and you're hearing what they're saying. You're learning from them and you're giving them a chance to learn by remembering what someone else told them. And it's reinforcing things. And that's, as an officer, it's great when you start seeing these junior guys start taking the responsibility and start taking a role and start learning. And I think that's exactly what you were just talking about.
Yeah, no, I think both your point, Clyde's point, Anthony's points are spot on. We talk about those things that, that bugle doesn't always make you right. And I think that we need more of that message throughout our service that, you know, bugles will never impress me. It's the guy wearing the bugles that's going to impress me and what they bring to the table. I don't care how many of those damn things got on your collar. At the end of the day, it's still the guy wearing them is going to make the difference. So one of the other things I kind of jotted for us this evening is, and it's going to be somewhat perspective based on where you're at in your career or in what part of the country, and we're all scattered out a little bit, but from your point of view, I will start with Roette here, from your point of view, your travels, you write articles and you do a lot of shit, Anthony. What is the biggest challenge you see right now that's kind of, that we see in the fire service today?
To me, honestly, I think it's communication. I think a lot of people are afraid that they can say the wrong thing and then it's going to follow them or it's going to get them in a bunch of trouble right there in the forefront. And I think people are just afraid to kind of let loose, be themselves in the firehouse. And then when you're comfortable is when you're truly learning. So when guys are on edge, it's kind of like if you let just the firemen go out and they do their a little bit of training on their own, the officer doesn't always have to be there. They're going to get more out of that because they're comfortable. They're not feeling like they're being quizzed or tested or evaluated. Then they show you once they've got it under control, the senior man handled it, the boss sees they did a good job. And I think that's the same thing when guys are on edge of, I got to watch everything I say or, you know, everything I do because this is the environment going on right now. It creates a situation or an environment in the firehouse where people aren't getting as much out of it as they could because of the fact that they're on edge or they're trying to watch everything they do just because, you know, the department might be going through things or whatever, and it's just people are afraid to, you know, say the wrong thing in one word. You know, they make one sentence that someone found offensive and not at all how it was said or meant or what, anything like that, and then it follows them their whole career. They're bounced out of the house or worse, you know, things like that. And then when you're just, if your mind's on stuff like that, it's not on what it needs to be on, and you're not learning, you're not going to be performing the way you should. So to me, I think that's kind of the biggest challenge, is finding a way to get is to get guys back to being themselves, being comfortable. And as much as I think the communication is the biggest challenge because people are afraid of what they say, I think the only solution to it is communication too. So I think the biggest problem is getting guys to open up so that everyone truly knows each other. You're not getting – no one's getting offended by, you know, they said this and I took it this way. You know who they are, and the guys are able to be themselves again in the firehouse and just focus on the job.
All right. I love that point. Chief, what do you think? The biggest challenge you see?
I agree with Rowett. In some instances, I think the culture of the fire station has changed, and it's really upon the officers and everybody, really, but to create a culture there that's forgiving and has grace, and we can understand that we do work in a different environment, and never should we abuse someone, but, you know, it is a different environment. But for me right now, I think the greatest challenges I'm currently having is, we have a very large separation between the officers, and a lot of the guys are older or really young. So getting that culture back into the fire station to where they are aggressive, they do want to train and move forward. The fire ground has changed so much, so significantly over the last few years that, things are happening so rapidly that we really have to be ahead of the game. And to get these guys to think and really look into the future of how this is going to progress and change and how rapidly things can happen, it's difficult for us. And, you got to be not one step ahead. You got to be three steps ahead nowadays. And to us right now, I think that's the hardest thing. We have a very limited amount of experience just because the fire numbers are down. We don't have all the old guys that are at the lower ranks who can take these guys under their wings. It's more dependent upon the officer, at least in my department. And, things are changing fast, and they're much more violent, lots more energy being released. And we really just have to be ahead of the game. And it takes a lot of work on our part to make sure we're always progressing forward. And they're aware of the significance of what they're facing.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that, Jeff, about that question?
I think the hardest part right now is getting guys out of their cell phones. How depressing is it when you walk into a kitchen and you see four or five guys sitting there and no one's saying a word and they're just all on their phones? That's, I think, our and the fire service's biggest problem is, all right, how can we create team and unity and cohesiveness and, you know, even just a friendship if everyone's off in their little world and they're just coming to work for 24 hours and they know, you know what, I just sit on my phone, no one bothers me, I do 24 hours, go on a few runs, go home. And it's trying to get the millennial mentality of sitting there staring at a screen to just, hey, let's talk, let's figure something out, let's do something. Even if it's, you know, that, when I see that as an officer, that's one of those times where I'm like, you know what, I'm going to be the bad guy. Hey, guys, we're going to go out, we're doing hydrants. I know you want to relax, whatever. Screw it. Because if they're bitching about me, they're at least together, doing something together, all together. So
that's
one of those times where you just take the hit.
Yeah, and I made it pretty simple. We didn't have phones at the kitchen table. During dinner time, which we referred to as family time, we didn't – our phones were face down. I do this even when I'm teaching a lot of times. I tell all the students in the room, unless they're taking a picture of a slide or something, put your phones face down. Ignore your goddamn cell phone for the next hour and a half while I'm talking, or that hour at dinner time, and have that family time. And – that really, you know, our training together, nobody had their phone unless we were taking, you know, a photo of something. And I climbed a rookie's ass one day when I asked him a street, and I knew he didn't know what street we just passed because his face was in his cell phone. So that became our norm while we were going back and forth to calls. Your phones had to be down because I want you paying attention to district, not, you know, what's happening on Snapchat at that second. So those are some of the things that, you know, that – you know, I agree with Joe. That's definitely a challenge that we face. Maybe I'm a little too deep for this group today or for this topic, but I think one of the challenges that we're seeing and we're going to continue to see if we don't make some changes to our fire service or changes to how we're doing some things is just as simply of just trying to hire guys into this job again. Everywhere I go, I hear numbers are down. We can't get enough applicants. The applicants are getting ain't worth a shit. I think we've got to take a more aggressive approach to bring in the 16-year-old Pizza Hut loving kids into the job and start promoting our job at a younger age and in the vocational schools. And not everybody's cut out for college, but I think we need more opportunities to expose, you know, 14, 13, 15, 16-year-old kids to start loving this job and understand how great this job is. And it seems to be a common theme that I'm hearing that, you know, more and more places are having harder and harder time to get guys to even apply. I don't know how Houston is right now. I know Atlanta was down over 100, and this was recently. And when I tested, they couldn't get guys hired fast enough. They had so many applicants, and that's not the case anymore. What about for Houston?
Well, we used to get 4,000 and 5,000 applicants, and now we're lucky to fill a class of 75. And that's a situation here that's a little different. We've got a political situation going on too. But I think you're right. We failed in letting people know what type of job this truly is and how great it is. And part of our culture, I think, has changed. You know, I always said if they just made this into a job, just like going to wherever to work for 8 hours, it would destroy the fire service because it can't ever just be a job. And we have lost some of that. I can remember if a guy just said, man, I got to put a new roof on my house Saturday. That's all he had to say, and four guys from work would be there to help him put his roof on. We got away from that. Everybody's busy. They got other stuff to do. They're on their phones. They got all these things. So, like at our station, we plan things. We're going to do this at his house today. We're going to have a barbecue here. We're going fishing there just to try to keep that culture alive. And it's difficult with some of these younger guys because they just don't want to do anything. I mean, you know, I hate to say that, but that's kind of the way. Or maybe it's not anything. Maybe their stuff isn't what I do. Maybe that's what it is, you know.
It's probably a combination of a lot of things. The distractions that Americans face with everything else where, what's going on on YouTube today is more important to helping out a brother. I'm not saying that's the case everywhere, and I don't want anybody to take that the wrong way, but we have to redevelop that want and desire that all of us obviously had when we came into the service. And I think it needs to be promoted out, you know, not wait till a guy's 28 and he goes, well, shit, the factory closed. I got nothing else to do. I'll go be on the fire department. And I don't want to see us get to that. We're just, you know, getting the bottom of the barrel guys. It needs to be back to where, you know, a top shelf guy doesn't get hired because there's 10 other top shelf guys ahead of him. And that's where I'd love to see us get back to eventually. But I think as far as challenges right now in the fire service, you know, that to me, I can see that being a real a problem for a lot of fire departments. And you get into the smaller ones and smaller organizations, it's even more so. And, you know, the money's not going to magically appear. And so we've got to find other ways in leadership and something that Clyde had said earlier about mentors. All that's going to be a huge factor in these guys. If anybody's ever heard Chief Scott Thompson from the Colony speak, they've not had a member quit their organization in 11 years. It's unheard of. That is absolutely unheard of that a department has not had people. The only time somebody leaves there is if they're retired or they have to get rid of them for some kind of disciplinary issue. Nobody quits to go chase a dollar because of their culture, their mentoring programs that Chief is huge on over there. And if you're, you know, you can always go to his website and look at what they're doing. It's truly impressive. And every member of his organization I've spoken to and messed with and talked about are just unbelievable into the job guys. And, I think every department should take a look at what they're doing at the Colony and really see that you can change your culture. And he's honest about it. It didn't happen overnight. So something that, you know, we should be looking at, all of us. It kind of led me to think while you guys were talking, what would you tell a 17-year-old? A 17-year-old comes to your firehouse, Rowett, and goes, hey, Captain, I kind of want to be a fireman. But what would you tell him that they'd make his ass run down and put an application in as soon as you turned 18?
I'd tell him to come ride with us. I mean, I think that'd be the best sell to people is, come ride with us. There's a few people that I work with today. They promoted up through the ranks that when I had a year or two on, they were all coming down with guys that were on the fire department and doing ride-alongs with us, fill out the paper and the hold harmless, and they'd come ride with us. And as soon as they turned 18 or, you know, got out of college, some of them were in college, they were signing up for the fire department. I mean, if you can get them to come ride with you, it sells itself. They get to see, you know, what that environment is in the firehouse, make a few calls and see what it's really about. But you get in the firehouse and you get around guys, especially, you know, on a weekend, not as many chiefs around because we got the whole admin in the station, more of a laid-back environment, the guys being the guys. It's going to sell itself. But if you can't do that, I mean, I would just be honest with them and tell them about the job and both the good and bad. If you're honest with people and they see honesty, they're going to trust what you're saying. And there's obviously way more good to what we do and enjoyment in what we do. Then there is the negatives. The negatives are just the political stuff that goes along with it. Everything about the job itself is going to be a sell. So be honest with people. Tell them what it's really about. Give them real expectations of what the job actually is and what the process is to get on and all that. And then offer them a ride-along if your department allows that. Let them come get an experience with it, ride, see what the guys is like, see what the environment's really like, and it'll sell itself.
Love that. What would you tell them, Jeff? I'm at your station. I'm 18. I'm not going to college because I have shitty grades. What would you tell me to get me to come on the job?
Well, first of all, my department's 21, so you got to wait till you're 21. But then after that, it's the best effing job in the entire world. You know, it's funny you guys are talking about recruitment problems. I took my test to get on. I think 60,000 people took the same test as me to get hired. I was number 5,000 on the list, and I was still hired. They hired that many people. So, I mean, it's hard for me to relate. But when people ask about our job, especially ours, everyone knows my job. Everyone. No matter where you go in this country, everyone knows my job.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's fun. You get to see cool things. We're nonstop busy. It's amazing. Sometimes when my time is, you know, my past year has been slow, and it's only because of what happened. You know, I was in companies doing 6,000 runs a year. I'm in a company now that's doing almost 5,000 runs a year. It's nonstop weird stuff that you get to see, and it's awesome. If you want to like dig into people's lives and see how people really live, take our job. It's so fun.
He definitely sees some stuff, no doubt about it. What about you, Chief? Thinking back to that pizza hounding kid that you were, what would you tell that kid?
Well, you know, the funny thing is my nephew called me today, and he's starting fire school, and he's tried everything else, and, you know, and he called me today and was telling me that he's going to start fire school here this week. So what an awesome thing for me. But I agree with these guys. You know, I mean, you somehow have to get across to them that this is the best job in the world. And I think one of the things that, like, I realized at some point was the things that we are allowed to do. Some of it is just friggin' awesome and cool. And, I mean, where in the world would someone, you know, you could call them while they were at work and say, hey, I'm in your house right now, and you need to come home because you've had a small fire. You know, no one would allow anyone else in their house without freaking out. But firemen, it's okay, you know.
Right.
And, you know, your infant is critically ill, and a stranger walks into your home, and you instantly hand the baby off to them. You know, that type of respect and trust is what really drives us, I think. And just the experiences that we're allowed to have. I mean, we spend the last moments of people's lives. We're the last people they see, you know, babies that are born. You're the first person to touch them. You know, no one that works in a cubicle somewhere, probably making four times what I make, they don't get those experiences. And so, you know, what's important to you? Is it the paycheck, or is it this life that, like, I mean, I've been doing this a long time, and I love the job. I love going to work. I will make every fire in the city of Houston if they'll let me, and I'd drive to New York and make some of those too if they'd let me. I mean, I would love, I just love it, you know, and somehow you have to get that across to these folks of how awesome this is, because to me, it's the best job, which has created the best life for me and my family. And people talk about our schedule. Well, that's one of the blessings of what we do. It allows you to be home sometimes with kids and get to see things. Now, granted, we're gone a bunch too, but there's just a lot of wonderful things about the job. You know, when I'm laying there dying, I'm not going to have one regret, because I have done the coolest stuff on earth and have met some of the most amazing people on earth. It's just outstanding.
Nah, yeah, I think we all take everything the three of you just said and make this gigantic recruiting poster for departments that are struggling with getting guys to come back on the job and apply, because I was fortunate. I came up in the fire side. That's all I've known, is because my dad and I knew from, you know, as young as I can remember going to fires at, you know, 7 years old, and, you know, sitting in my dad's Ford pickup truck and watching those guys work, and then letting me do stuff after the fire was out and help pick up equipment. At 7 years old, I'm picking up fire, well, not much of a fire hose, but I pick up a section of it or a piece of it and go, you know, what do I do now? And those were, you know, I was brought up, you know, kind of like Roette was saying, the ride along was my reality. So that's, you know, I knew it was the greatest job in the world when I was a kid. You know, I think there are some programs and some departments are doing really well with some of those things at the same time. Well, we did a high school program for a department I worked for part-time, and we basically got these high school kids through their Firefighter 1 and their Firefighter 2, and they got immediate volunteer positions with that organization, and a lot of those guys have moved up and are officers now and with bigger departments, and it started by them just coming to basically an after-school program, and we were training them, and those guys fell in love with everything we were showing them and all the things, all the cool shit they got to do. So I think there are avenues. I think a little more time, effort, energy, and dollars need to be spent towards that to develop that next generation of the Chief Gordons and the Ficarellis and the Roettes coming up into the ranks in the near future. So one of the things that I've kind of picked up on over the last really 2 years, and I'll give every ounce of credit in the world to Chief Brian Brush. And when I talk about Chief Brian Brush out there in the great state of Oklahoma and the Firefighter Rescue Survey, and I think it's finally
given the, all of us who have been preaching this message, now we got something to preach about with actual facts and data, because we've been drilled so hard about, oh, we're losing 1,300, 1,700, 2,000 civilians every year, but we never knew how many people we were rescuing until Brian got this firefighter rescue survey really up and running. It's kind of taking a life of its own. And what I really see is that we're becoming aggressive again. We're getting away from staying out in the yard, and we're getting away from, you know, it's more about our safety than it is theirs. And I just kind of wanted to, you know, I know with Rowett's department and, you know, everybody's department, but do you kind of see that trend kind of going back to I don't want to say the good old days, but going back to our mission first kind of mentality of being aggressive and, you know, making these grabs and stuff, Anthony?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, going around and talking to people from different places too, not just locally, but from all over the country, that's the impression I get, impression, damn, I'm stumbling on words. The impression I'm getting from people is that's what it kind of like, almost like the senior guys have said enough. And this is the way it works. This is why. And they're letting these people see, look, this might be, you know, easier. It might be safer for you, but this is why we're here, and we're not here for you. And it's gone back to putting the citizens first no matter what. And talking to people, you know, at different conferences and things like that, it doesn't seem to be just something I'm seeing, but it's something everybody's seeing, that it's going back to that way. I'm with you. I think what Chief Brush did and the rescue survey has been around for a while, but when he took – you know, what he did and really did a lot of research in the first quarter of this year and put the real information out there, put the stats to it of, yes, there's this many civilians die every year, but look how many we're saving. And at that point, mm-hmm. when you're making that many rescues every year, not only is it proving that, yes, we are being aggressive and putting them first, but it's also putting to bed any argument that anyone has that we don't need to, because it's showing just how effective we are, and we can't get away from that. But I do think going around and when I talk to people when I'm in different places, that's what they're seeing as well, is that it is going back to that aggressiveness and putting the citizens first no matter what every time.
That's, yeah, I think so. Clyde, I know Houston has got an incredible, incredible reputation for aggressive firefighting, but I also know that you – you know, you live in a different community, and you're around a lot of guys from different departments throughout the definitely around the state of Texas. What are your thoughts, or what are you seeing?
Yeah, I agree. You know, even in Houston, we've always had the reputation of being aggressive, or even dangerously aggressive. But we've always talked amongst ourselves, and you know, that's the 20 percenters. You know, you've always had those 20 percenters that'll give all, and but then you always have, you know, different crews and different stations that were a little different. But I think people are realizing that. Well, first, I think we got into left field, and it wasn't out of spite or anything else. I think there were supervisors, fire chiefs, whatever, that were trying to do the right thing. They were trying to keep firemen from getting killed. And but they didn't realize by doing some of these tactics that they were killing civilians, and they were actually creating an environment that was going to make their firefighters even in a more dangerous situation, because they're not allowed to make entry unless there's someone trapped. They're not training with Class A materials. They're not, you know, if we're pretending all the time and it's not realistic, and I'm not allowed to go crawling through a zero vis hallway, then at 3 o'clock in the morning when they expect me to, I'm not going to be very comfortable with that. And right. To me, that creates an environment that causes that firefighter to not perform well and will allow him to even get into more trouble. I think the general firefighters, they want to be aggressive. It's just some of our, management is just not allowing them to do it. You know, I tell people all the time, it's our responsibility to place ourselves in harm's way to search survivable space and create survivable space. That's what we're here to do. We do a lot of other things, but that is the one thing that we are here to do that no one else can do. And if the public mm-hmm. ever realizes there's fire departments out there that aren't doing those things, then I think they're going to be pretty upset. So I love to turn back towards aggressiveness. I will be the first to tell you that I used to just be aggressive. I wasn't very smart. I was just aggressive. Now you have to be smart and aggressive, and there's no reason for you not to be. But we have to get in there. We have to get people out. There's no way you can tell me from the street that it's not survivable. You have to prove to me that it's not. And the only way to do that is to try to get inside of it. So, I love the turn back. I spoke at a fire chief's conference recently, and a lot of people loved what I had to say. And there were a few that met me in the hallway and weren't very happy with what I had to say. Because, you know, again, they want to keep their people safe, which I do too, but, this job is dangerous, and there's a certain amount of risk to it. And, you know, we signed up to get people out of burning buildings because, you know, no one else can do it. The police officers can't, even though they may want to try. The parents who are standing in the yard can't. We show up with the gear and the equipment and the training, and we have to go in and get them. And that should really mm-hmm. be our drive every time we roll out of the house is, man, I got to get there. I got to get them out. And if that doesn't work, you know, we're not miracle workers either. Then we did the best we could, and I think that's what we need to look at. And every time we roll out of the house, just be ready to go.
Yeah, I think you're right. There we did trend that direction for a while. That we got so I sat in chief meetings and heard that rhetoric about nobody's going to get hurt. Nobody, I don't want anybody getting hurt. Nobody's getting hurt. Nobody's getting hurt. And in the meanwhile, we were hurting our customers, our civilians, the people who count on us when we were preaching that message. And, you know, obviously, Chief, you had the privilege and to hear mine and Danny's class that, you know, it cost somebody's career for doing their damn job. And it's, you know, it's not the first time, and unfortunately it won't be the last, but I do believe we have made that turn. I know – Joe, I know FDNY never went down that rabbit hole too deep, but what about some of the other departments, you know, Karen's and maybe some other people you've talked to about trending back towards that aggressive firefighting, interior operations style?
Well, like, even my department didn't go down, you know, the survivability profiling, whatever that is, route, but you know, they still made changes. Like back in 2012, 2014, when the UL studies came out talking about all the ventilation stuff, like the job, you know, our ladder three, Old Law Tenements. That is the truck company Bible. I know truck stuff, engine podcast, just bear with me on this one. But, you know, we were doing it for 100 years. It worked amazing. It's been perfected by guys who saw way more fire than I'll ever see in my entire career. So if they wrote this down, it's as good as gold. It's been tried, mm-hmm. tested, and true. 2012, 2014, UL studies came out, talked about this stuff. The job changed ladders three. They changed ventilation, saying that don't take the bulkhead right away, the bulkhead at the top of the stairs. We're worried that if we take the bulkhead, it will, you know, create a nice little flow path. The fire's going to come out. You know, it's a one in a billion chance. But they listened to UL, and they took that to heart, and they changed it. And by changing our tactics, it made us worse at a fire that should be our bread and butter. And mm-hmm. luckily, our job listened to us, and in 2018 – they actually changed it and went back to the way it was for the past 100 years. So even us, we took some of the safety stuff to heart, changed 100-year-old tactics that worked for a reason, and realized, you know what, the new stuff doesn't work so well. So we went back to the 100-year-old stuff. And we're getting back to the aggressiveness even for us. And then, you know, you mentioned about Karen's department, Loudoun County in Virginia. The DMV is a very aggressive region. It's awesome to hear those guys talk and see what they do and learn about their fires. One of the things I did at FDIC 2 years ago was went to a lecture from a Loudoun County chief talking about a fire where some guys almost died in Loudoun County. And it was like, there wasn't, we're not going to do this. We want to save our guys. Like, we're still going to be aggressive. We're still going to make this push, but we're going to add a couple of steps just to make us a little bit safer. So that way we recognize the problems before they happen. This is what we learned. If we just see the whole picture and put it together, we can be just as aggressive, if not more aggressive than before, but we're not going to get guys hurt. And I think that's what we are learning more and more, is if you have all that knowledge, you take the classes, you take the science, you take what UL is saying, we can be more aggressive but safer. And I love that we're trending in that direction.
Yeah, and I know exactly the Meadowood Court Fire is the one you're talking about. They're in Loudoun.
Yeah, Chief Tiger.
Yeah, it definitely changed. I don't want to say changed the fire service, but it definitely opened some eyes up that a two-story, you know, wood frame single family on, you know, I think it was on that basement, almost resulted in you know, a lot of guys being killed. And that came from, obviously, some incident command issues and some of the ways they were operating at that time. And those are the things we should. We should make those adjustments when we have those issues. I'm sure Houston, I don't want to quote the year, Chief, the McDonald's fire, where you guys lost two members at a closed McDonald's restaurant fire.
Yeah.
I'm sure mm-hmm. you guys looked at that and said, whoa, what are we doing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we made changes. You know, We've had 26 line of duty deaths in about 25 years, something like that. And when I came in 1990, I don't know, but it had been probably 30 years, if not longer, for a guy who died inside a structure fire. You know, they'd fall off the truck, this and that. But in 1996, I think Reuben was the first one of my experience in. And then things started to spiral out of control, in my opinion. You know, I think the fire ground changed, and we were just low to change with it. So you have to take these things that have happened and the UL studies. I mean, that you can't argue with science. I mean, it's information. I think the problem with firemen is, you know, you dangle a carrot, man, they just jump on it, and they're gone. You know, they know a piece of the story. They don't know the whole story. And, right. You know, you have to take that information and see how it applies to you and what you're doing. And there'll be some changes made, and there won't be. But, yeah, we have changed quite a bit since several line of duty deaths here. But then again, some of it we haven't changed just because I think bad things happen in this job, you know. So.
Right. Yeah. And I don't think anybody on this panel and obviously the folks that we all know and work with and care about ever want to see, you know, if I never see another line of duty death come across my phone, that'd be a great day, obviously. But, you know, I look at, and I think it's one of the things I always told young officers and I teach when I'm doing safety officer classes. It's amazing to me, you know, they can tell you I think we even joked about this once before, they can tell you the stats of their running back on their fantasy team, but they won't know a damn thing you're saying when you say the Southwest Inn fire in Houston, Texas. I've actually been able to change guys' mindsets by them simply reading a NIOSH report and studying and what we can do better, or what would you have done. I put them in those scenarios in command classes. What would you have done differently after reading this report? And obviously it's easy. You know, it's easy to be, you know, the quarterback after the incident, but those are great learning tools as well as when we have these rescues. And I love that all these rescues are being shared because those are successes that we should all be learning from. If you look at the numbers on BES, I thought the 80% survival rate on BES was just an incredible, incredible number that we're pulling people out of windows. They're actually living. And those are successes. So we should be learning from those things just as much as, you know, we learn from the tragedies in our job. And unfortunately, the rescues get about, one day of news coverage, you know, Houston Fire saves four kids, FDNY pulls two from a building, Mobile saves an old lady from the third floor. That gets one blurb on the news, but if you guys screw up, that gets played for weeks and weeks and weeks about, oh, the fire department did this, and the fire department's unsafe, and the fire department doesn't do this. So I think as leaders in the fire service, we should be really promoting those success things a little more heavily than we sometimes do. And I always will believe that. So I'm going to, this is, I'm, you know, the way I listed, but I'm going to ask Chief Gordon this. Hardest fire to be in charge of, Chief, as far as an incident commander, the fire that you hate being in charge of the most?
You know, well, that's kind of a threefold question to me, because there's some that concern me the most. There's some that are hard and some that I hate.
Okay.
The big old defensive, we sit there for 6 hours and flow water. I hate those.
I hate those. Yeah, it is. You pull up,
you know,
like,
what
oh,
I
my
mean?
God, look how cool this is. And after about that third hour of watching that sumbitch burn, you're like, oh, my God, when I can get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, man, when will this thing fall down?
Yeah.
I think the ones that, you know, obviously the high-rise stuff is, it's got a lot of moving parts to it. And you got to get that thing set up really quick and really well at the beginning, just so it'll flow through. And, you know, so that those are fairly complicated. But I think the ones that concern me the most are you know, the really aggressive interior operations. These guys that I work with on a daily basis are, you know, they're aggressive firefighters. And they're going to push the envelope and lean towards that risky side as opposed to a little safer. And, you know, it's my responsibility to keep them right. And it's those officers' responsibility. So when I'm pushing them, they push themselves hard and I push them hard. So when I'm pushing them hard and it's a little sketchy and they're teetering on the edge, those really concern me just because I don't want to get anybody hurt. We're going to get in there and take care of business. And every once in a while, you know, they just don't always go the way you like for them to, or they get a little more sketchy than you would like. But when I got them buried pretty deep off in there, and I know it's bad on them, and, you know, I've been there, so I know what it feels like. And you know, those concern me the most. But really, that's about it, man. I love making fires, I'll be honest with you.
Oh, yeah.
There's not
that
many of them that I don't like to go to, so And I always loved, you know, I loved being a firefighter. That was a great position for me. I did that for 11 years because I just didn't want to leave it. And then I loved being an engine captain because I was just a glorified firefighter in a lot of ways. You know, I got to do all the cool stuff still, but I had a little more responsibility. And I really like being a chief because I've been around a while and stuff don't work. You know, parts of me wake up slower than other parts, and, you know, it's just a little easier on me. But I still I feel like I'm a very involved chief, and I'll get in there with them if I get that opportunity. And so I really just love it, and I'll make them all. But probably those ones where I know it's pretty bad on them in there and I'm trying to make it better and we're trying to get people out, those concern me the most because I got to get them out.
Yeah, and I think we both kind of feel the same way. If I knew I had certain companies pulling up first, and especially if the word entrapment came over the radio, I knew I had certain companies that, you know, if like the bathtub was the only thing not on fire, they were going to go in and search that bathtub. I mean, those are the kind of crews that, yeah, you love having, but those are the ones that always kept me a little more on edge. The big surrounding drowns, I always kind of would laugh sometimes. I hear guys screaming and hollering. I was like, what are you screaming and hollering about? We're not doing anything. You know? We're trying to keep the tank from going to the next
the
hour.
First,
after that,
the first 5 minutes was cool. The next 6 hours is going to suck.
Yeah.
It looked good. We made some good pictures out of it, but that's about it.
Yeah, and commercials. Any, you know, whether it's high rise or anytime the guys had to get deep into a building, was nerve-wracking for me as far as the IC, from the incident command standpoint. Just, you know, because you just don't have the same visual. At a house, I can really see conditions changing from the, you know, from the front yard or from the back of the car. But if they're 30, 40 feet deep, what they're seeing and what I'm seeing is going to be two different things at times. And those can be some nerve-wracking long incidents until you know that you're starting to get good push and good knockdown on the fire itself. But what about for you? Anthony, I'm going to save you last because I guarantee I already know what type of fire as a boss you hate going to the most. I already know this answer. So I'm going to ask Jeff.
Yeah.
Jeff, worst type of fire you like going to?
Basement fires? Can I just be that simple and blunt? I hate basement
mm-hmm.
fires.
Okay.
It's always a crappy interior stair. It's always tight. At least the basements in where I work, you know, they're 100-plus years old, so I can't stand up in them. You know, some of them have dirt floors,
mm-hmm.
and they're just filled with crap. And
yeah.
They're miserable. When you're going down the basement stairs, all you're thinking is, oh, please, let me just get down there. This hurts. This sucks. I hate being in a chimney. I hate basement fires. But other than that, I like going to fires. I'm with the team.
Oh, yeah.
I have a blast. Most of my buildings are all high-rise, so as long as the standpipe works, hey, let's go and have fun. I guess my answer is pretty simple on that one. Basement fires. Hate basement
yeah.
fires.
Yeah, as an engine boss, I didn't give a shit what it was. I didn't give a shit what kind of fire it was. As long as it was on fire, I was good with it. I didn't really have a love or hate or anything on those. Anthony, do you want me to answer the question for you?
If you want to.
I already know. Anthony's fire that he hates the worst is when the building is floating.
Yeah.
Am I right?
And that might be unique to my run area. And like, if I
it
remember
is.
Right, Clyde, that you guys, the port has its own fire department, doesn't it, in Houston?
Yeah,
right?
But we make all of them. They're
right.
limited.
Well,
so they have such limited manpower. I've made five of them here, which is a lot. We don't make
them
regularly. We'll make them every few years.
That's what I'm not a fan of. I'm first due to the port, and we don't have any type of port fire department. It's all us, so I'm not a big fan of those. And especially when they're down in, like, the engine room, and you're going down in basically very narrow vertical stairs, basically, and the radios don't work, and then there's really no way out. So I'm not a big fan of those. Plus the fact that I can't swim.
Basically, you just mixed up a high rise and a basement, stuck it all in one thing.
Yeah.
and it's in
it's
the water.
That
all
is
the
a very
truck
good.
The fire good
service in one building.
Yeah. So those are the ones I'm not a big fan of, but they are my first due, so it is something we work on a pretty good bit. We try to make sure we know what we're doing and we're comfortable with the ships. And one thing I will say, I don't know if other fire departments do it. It was something that kind of started being more common with the last fire chief that just retired versus the ones before him while I've been on the job. And the new fire chief that was one of his assistants, now the fire chief, has kept it going. Is they actually have a pretty good relationship with the port. And a lot of times if there's a ship that's going to be in there that's got anything real like special about it or hazardous about it, they send us some training on that ship. And a lot of times they set up walkthroughs for us, so we could treat it like a building and go pre-plan it and kind of know as much as we can about it. So, and I mean, that's a good benefit for us that we used to not really have. I can't remember a time when I was a firefighter in the same engine company riding the back step that we were able to go into the port and do a pre-plan on somebody's ship. And now it's not something we do every day, but it's also not very uncommon. I mean, we made a fire in the port the other day right before I went and saw Todd over in Pensacola. We had a fire on a ship, and like the next shift we were sent a bunch of information about a ship they got coming into port, so we know the hazards going on with it, of what they're going to be doing with it and all this kind of stuff. And then they're sending us more video training they're doing on it, just so we understand, you know, what's going on with it. So we do try to keep up with it, even though it's not something we do all the time, but it's also definitely not my favorite thing to go to in the world.
But I think you kind of made an interesting point, you know, when we were talking about what to say to, you know, to this young guy to try and decide about coming onto the job. But One of the things that we're kind of saying it all without saying it, the job's always something different every single day. You know, Clyde mentioned, you know, you're the first thing a baby sees when you make a delivery, and then ship fires and high rises, basements and tenements with dirt floors. You know, and that list, if we, you can make a list, you can spend 5 hours just making a list of all the different things that you get to do, see, experience, and learn about by being on this job. And there, guarantee there is no other job that offers that many unique things to do, see, learn about, experience. And I think this is one of the coolest things about the fire service. You know, I'm excited about this other opportunity I'm going to take on a little bit, and working with all these young guys in a young up and coming fire department. And, you know, even though it won't be, you know, my schedule's a little busy, it'll just be fun. It's something new. I'm going to learn some new stuff. We'll learn some mountain rescue stuff, I think, I hope. Something different I've never done before. So it'd be kind of cool to learn about that kind of thing. So I have a question, and I kind of jot this down listening, but I know what everybody, I know what Clyde said about like this, I like this, I like this, I like that. And everybody's saying that. So I'm going to ham everybody up. Well, I think I know the answer, but I want to know the reason behind your answer on this question. And we'll start with Joe. Engine or truck, and why? What is the best?
Oh, engine. Come on, there's nothing better. So I'm an engine boss. For us, we have four guys on the engine, four firemen and me. So there's five guys. So my job, I am a glorified cheerleader. I love it. I have a flashlight. I'm next to the nozzle man right in front of that fire, telling him, like, hey, buddy, you're doing such a great job. Keep putting water on it. What's better than that? What's better than being in front of a fire with nothing but a flashlight telling a guy, hey, let's keep going. Come on. It's the greatest position. Truck guys are in the back. They're just crawling around. They're bumping their heads into walls because they can't see. I'm there next to the nozzle man having fun. It's the best
awesome
position in the world.
Isn't that, don't they refer to like FDNY Metal Day as Truck Day?
Oh, who cares about Metal Day? Those are just glorified. Those are tall tales from Brooklyn with short guys and long mustaches. It doesn't matter. Metal Day don't count.
All right, Rowett.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the engine on that. I will be completely honest. It's pretty much what I've always done. You know, I've worked overtime shifts, time swaps, details in trucks, but I've never been assigned to one. I've always been in an engine. To me, it's you're right where the action's at. You're right there at the fire putting it out. But also, I'm in a department that it's very engine-centric. We don't have as many trucks. We're very engine company driven. Not always doing strictly engine work, especially when you get other sides of the city. Where I work, you're pretty much always going to be doing just an engine work. You're not going to be doing anything else for the most part. But it's what I know. But also being in a department that's very engine, our culture is very engine driven. And I mean, there's nothing better than making that turn and being in that, right, you know, coming down the hallway. You see the glow down at the end, and you make that final push on it. I don't really remember a time I was working a shift in a truck that I had anything beat that. But that's me personally. I know some other guys that disagree. I mean, the guy that I'm stationed with, he's a boss on a truck. He said when 20 years in an engine, he went to the truck, and now he enjoys that more. I don't agree with him. Nothing beats that final push down the hallway to me. That's the adrenaline rush you can't match.
Okay, and Chief, and if you want to say Chief's car, that's fine. I don't think that's going to be accurate, but if you want to say that, you go ahead. But favorite position so far in your career, and why the best position?
I think for me right now, I love being a chief, just because, you know, I don't mind being in charge, but if they slip up and give me a division or something, I'm that cheerleader that you were just talking mm-hmm. about, you know. I'm going to be right there with you really close. I'm going to be supervising you from about 2 feet behind you if I can. But, no, the best job, it's the engine, man. I have to say it. I spent several years on a truck and, you know, cut a lot of holes and
searched a lot of buildings, but man, there's nothing like being on that engine. I like to sleep on the truck. We got a little more sleep, and I used to tell myself always makes the good stuff. But yeah, it just wasn't for me. I didn't enjoy it near as much. You got into some stuff every once in a while. You know, if you got in there and got some people out, that was always good. And of course, making it a little better for the engine company, you know, and kind of watching over them some. But yeah, if I had to do it all over, I'd be on that engine company for sure.
Yeah, and I was like, yeah, I loved being a BC. I truly loved when I was still a battalion chief, and enjoyed that responsibility of, you know, training the companies and interacting with so many different guys. But when I got to go back to being a captain after a few issues, I truly, my whole career coming on the job, you always started on the engine. I just stayed with engine work. Lieutenant, I was in the, you know, on. I never worked in a slow engine company, so I was used to being up, you know, four, five, six, seven times a night. So I loved it. I mean, I didn't care what the call was. We were up. We were doing work. But there's something to be said about being the first unit, which is typically the engine, first unit on the scene. Yeah, to me, your best bosses down the road spend a lot of time on engine companies, because that first engine, whether you got other units up your ass or if you got a little delay, you're making all those first key critical decisions as an engine boss. And you make or break. The engine boss makes or breaks every fire in my eyes. As a battalion chief, I always thought that. As an engine boss, I always thought that. If I'm not positioned right, if I don't get the lines laid right, if I don't pick the right entry point, I identify where the fire is, I don't get water on that fire, everything else is going to go sideways, and it's going to go sideways really crappy and really fast. And that's for the guys doing the search, for our victims that may still be in there. Engine boss is vital to a successful operation. And, you know, I know right now every truck guy in the country has turned off the show and is, you know, MFing me.
They're typing the emails as we speak. Yeah.
If you think about your engines, we make the first initial everything.
Todd, it's just like what Andy Frederick said over 20 years ago. The fire goes as the first line goes. You get that first line in place in a good spot. You have the right water. You have a positive water source. Fire's going to go out. The fire goes as the first line goes. That holds true more today than it even did back in the 90s when Andy said it.
Oh, man, that is such a good point right there, too. And I think Clyde was even saying that early on in the show that, you know, how fast things are moving on the fire ground, the heat releases, the fire dynamics. You better have strong engine bosses if you're going to be successful at any fire we go to. I've never seen a fancy-ass Ouija board on the back of a fancy-ass SUV ever put out a fire. But I've seen a lot of engine companies.
Chiefs just get in the way. Chiefs get in the way all the time. Three just people. Let the engine bosses
Here we
do
go.
It. It'll go.
A good driver, a good boss, and a good firefighter can do a lot of damn work, just the three of them, and that's the majority of the American Fire Service out there right now. And those guys are out there making grabs, setting other companies up for success, you know, by proper hose line placement and making things tenable for other searches. So, yeah, I'm not saying that because we're on an engine podcast. You know, I'm saying that what I truly believe, that, you know, without a good engine company getting there first and setting up the scene, man, everything else, then, you know, when the chief gets there, now he's having to play first engine boss, then do their job. The truck captain can't do his job because he first arrived in engine, then do their job. So it's, you know, it all works together, but we need to have a lot of focus on our engine bosses, you know, on every fire department, because those guys are the backbone to every operation, especially if they're alone for a few seconds. If they're alone for a minute, that's a lot of shit can happen in 1 minute. So we got to kind of keep that in mind. I wanted to throw that question out there. I thought, I've never asked that question, and it'll probably lower the downloads because of that question, because every truck guy in the country is turning us off right now, but that's okay. We need you guys to don't get to, it's okay. We love truck guys. Just, we love engine guys more.
So,
hey, there's been a lot of truck guys make it better for me as an engine guy. I can promise you that.
Oh, yeah.
When
no,
they
that,
cut
that,
a hole in the roof, take
guys.
The lid off, it gets better in here. I don't care what anybody
oh, yeah.
says. So,
yeah.
I'm all for
oh,
the truck
I
crews. I just don't want to do the work.
Yeah, I'm not never a fan of being up on
I mean, I love those guys, but I don't want to do it.
Yeah, I still
good job.
I still remember the first time I was on a line, you know, 13 years ago in a tenement fire, and you hear a roof's open, and then 5 seconds later, like, hey, I can see again. This is great.
Mm-hmm.
The trucks definitely serve a purpose, but
they're oh, yeah.
a little further down the line.
Yeah, it's still hard to be being that first guy on the scene, making the hard decisions and the right decisions, too. So, I mean, I always know where the roof is. I don't always know where the fire is, but I can guarantee you I know where the roof is every fire I've gone to. So, I think those are it's a perspective. And, you know, you get like a Mike Ciampa on here, and after he badmouths the engine guys for a while, he'll explain to us why it's so important to have the truck guys. So. It's what you love about the job, and again, things you should be telling these young guys, man. That's a different beast right there of all the other things you get to do on this job: engine work, truck work, heavy tech rescue, dive. I don't know how those guys are out of their mind do that dive crap, but yeah, there's just so many unique opportunities. So I know Clyde is your first time on. We always kind of wrap the show because we're, you know, right there at our, where we try to wrap our show. We're not the 3-hour beat something, you know, beat a dead horse. But I always like to do little closing remarks, and I'm going to switch it up just a little bit this evening. We'll start with Joe and Anthony, and I'm going to say something really quick, and then I want. Our guest tonight to be our final closeout tonight because of how much I you know, just getting to know him and how much respect I have for everything he's bringing to the fire service throughout the country right now is absolutely incredible. So, Joe, if you could kind of cap your thoughts for this evening.
My thoughts are pretty simple. It's been a very slow 14 months. Things have been weird. They're becoming normal. Things are picking up. Guys, people are going to start going back out. They're start going to do dumb things again. Fires are going to tick back up. It's going to be an awesome, fun summer to be a fireman. I am looking forward to seeing all of you guys at FDIC in August. I look forward to teaching my class, first line in multiple dwellings. Come check it out. It'll be fun. Let's have a good time. Let's laugh. Let's talk fire stuff. And this is a great night, Chief. It was awesome listening to you. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Awesome. Rowett?
First off, Chief, appreciate you coming on. I always like talking to you, hearing your story. Hopefully we'll be somewhere together again here soon. I get to listen to something and what you've been doing, and you make me feel bad with all the pictures you put on Facebook of all the fires you've been going to every day and hurt my feelings with that. But I want
to
reiterate
I'm
going
to try to
Joe
every
and,
day, too.
Yeah, and I'm going to change your name to Side again, too. I want to reiterate something as a kind of final thought I had that Todd, you said, and Joe both said, and I had written down earlier too, was put the phones down and be observant. Don't just and Todd, I know you said like going to calls, coming back, no phones. Pay attention to your area, but also you're getting ready to move up. You're trying to learn from the guys ahead of you, whether you're just trying to learn the job, you're new, or you're getting ready to promote. Put your phone down and observe the guys you're learning from. You know, watch what they do. There's a reason that they have people following them, you know, and learn how they do it. They learned this job way before you did. There's no way you're going to learn what they know through a book. They know it through having done it. So watch them, see what they do, and find some good mentors and model yourself after them, and it'll set you up to be successful.
Awesome, Matt. And I couldn't agree with you more on all those points, Anthony. You know, for me, it's more of an honor to sit back and just listen. I truly enjoy listening to everybody, you know, all the guests that have come on, and was really excited about, you know, this evening. And, you know, obviously, I get to speak to Clyde fairly, you know, on not a regular basis, but often enough. And he's doing some just incredible things in his part of the country. If you ever, ever
or in the area, or you see that he's speaking, or Mo Davis is speaking, or Howard Reinwald, or Kyle Romulus. This is a super strong bunch coming out of that Houston, Texas area right now that I would recommend to anybody. I've listened to those guys. I've seen them teach. They bring a wealth of knowledge, and it's not coming out of books. That's what I love the most about all those guys. Listen to Clyde and Mo, the last couple of times they've taught have just been eye-opening, refreshing, realistic type of things. And so, you know, as far as the final thought goes, my thought is, you know, if you see one of those guys, Chief Gordon or those guys, find a way to get to that class or to that lecture or that speech or whatever they're doing. They are just definitely top shelf. And Chief, from the bottom of my heart, truly an honor. Keep doing what you're doing, and I want you to kind of close us out this evening.
Well, first, obviously, thank you guys very, very much. I mean, it's an honor for me to be part of this, and I appreciate what you guys are doing. And my world has changed so much over the last few years, just having the opportunity to meet you guys and just be part of what you guys are doing has just been amazing. And I'm so thankful to Howard Reinwald and Kyle and old Mo Davis. You know, I get the opportunity to work with Mo every day. And as long as I make more fires than him, that's all that really matters to me. So, because I know he hates it.
I hope he heard that.
He'll never admit it, but I make more fires than he does. You know, guys that are listening to this, and just realize how special this opportunity is that you have to be part of this career. I believe we were chosen to do this, and it's a gift. And realize how special you are. And, you know, I've had a lot of life, and I've had some things that have been really hard, and there were certain people that interacted or helped me through those times. And just realize that you are making a difference in the people that you touch every day. You may never know what kind of difference you're making, but for them and for generations to come, they'll remember it forever. So it's the best job in the world. Treat it like it is and get out there and make fires, have a good time, save people. That's what we're here to do.
Awesome. That is so... And, you know, you guys just got a very small Chief Gordon class in all reality, and he truly speaks from his heart when he talks about this job, and he's not making that up. He's not out trying to sell books or anything or make a lot of money. He truly loves his job, and it, like I said before, I get to see Mo in a few weeks, in a month or so, up in Missouri at the Lake of the Ozarks. I'm excited to hang out with him a little bit because it's been a minute, and hopefully I'll be seeing all these guys real soon again. I know we got some things coming up. I'm excited to get back and work with these guys side by side. It's always an honor. So, fellas, I truly appreciate it. As always, we appreciate everybody who listens and takes time to download, and your feedback's always appreciated. You can always reach any of us. If you look at the web pages, obviously all our information, you know, Fire Life Training and Port City. And Joe, yours again. I'm sorry, bro.
He just dropped his call.
Oh, he just hung up.
I don't know what happened.
Fine, Joe.
I don't know. I just saw his phone number just disappeared off the board here.
Okay, that's fine. He may just had a bad connection. Not a big deal. But we do truly appreciate everybody reaching out to us, and we will talk to everybody very, very soon. Chief, again, thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, brothers.
All right, we'll talk to y'all soon.
Y'all have a good night.
All right, buddy.